News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You are listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Friday edition of the show. Here we are. It's another Friday. Just about 1 hour to go here for many of us before we can head out for the weekend. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you hosting the show today. This is, of course, the program where we take longer looks at things that have been playing out in the news around Michigan's great Southwest. If you've heard about it on WSJM News as of late, you'll hear about it again on Our Take, but in a more in-depth fashion. We have longer conversations with the folks who are in the know here in Michigan's great Southwest and the folks who are making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest. Thanks for tuning in. On today's program, we have several guests. First of all, we will chat with Senate candidate Bob Carr. Bob Carr is a Republican who is running for the GOP nomination for Senate here in Michigan next year. He is from Southwest Michigan originally, and he recently decided to step up his campaign when Congressman Fred Upton announced that he's not seeking the Senate seat of Debbie Stabenow. So Bob Carr running in the GOP primary to go up against Stabenow next year. We'll hear from Bob Carr on the next segment of today's Our Take. We will also chat with Janet Cocchiarelli with the Pokagon Fund. They recently released a study on hunger in Harbor Country, Southern Berrien County. The Pokagon Fund has worked with a local church to do a study on the food needs of individuals down in the sort of New Buffalo-ish area. We'll learn about that program coming up on today's Our Take. We'll also check in with Eleanor Siraki of the Van Buren Conservation District. They recently announced the discovery of a new invasive species here in Southwest Michigan. It was found down near Niles. We'll learn about that on today's Our Take. And then finally, we will close out today's show with a discussion of the weekend box office. Our man in the dark, Jacob Holmes, who is sort of our blockbuster expert here at WSJM, he'll pop in here. He and I will talk about what options you have if you want to go to the movies this weekend. There's actually nothing new opening here in Benton Harbor, but there are some interesting films on the horizon. Jacob and I will chat about that. And if you'd like to weigh in on something that we discuss here on Our Take, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E @wsjm.com. Right now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will chat with Senate candidate Bob Carr. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You are listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Friday edition of the show. I hope you have a wonderful weekend planned out for yourself. Right now for this segment of the show, I thought we would check in with Bob Carr. He reached out to me recently because Bob Carr is running for the United States Senate here in Michigan. He's an historical preservationist, if you would ask him to describe himself, and he's originally from Southwest Michigan. I chatted with him about his candidacy for the Senate. He's a Republican running for the nomination to go up against Debbie Stabenow next year. And Bob Carr sort of stepped his campaign up when Congressman Fred Upton announced that he is not going to run for Senate. And sort of as a courtesy, Bob here wasn't too vocal about his candidacy until Fred bowed out. But then Fred did bow out, so he reached out to me and I chatted with him about his candidacy for the United States Senate. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Bob, so you're running for United States Senate here in Michigan. First of all, you have Southwest Michigan ties. You were telling me that you're actually from here originally.
I, at 9 months, ended up in an orphanage in St. Joe, Michigan, and it was the Michigan Children's Aid Society. Mm-hmm. And I can count over 20 foster homes just in Berrien County, and well, actually over to Dowagiac and so on, that I grew up in before I got into high school and went into boarding school. Hmm. So it's like my home, but my wife and I wanted to do a project, and we, but another couple decided to go to Benton Harbor. We rented a building for $1, went through all the codes, got the Salvation Army and Sister Rita from the Catholic Church and the St. Joe Congregational Minister and the Lutheran Minister together, and we put in the Benton Harbor Soup Kitchen, which really wasn't about food, it was about getting people in there, teaching them responsibility, and it's been running 27 years. because of the way we run it, and we were run it, and, you know, very volunteer-oriented. The state of Michigan needs to have someone really focus on the state of Michigan. So in my adult life, I've been doing projects over the state of Michigan. I'm known as a historic preservationist, the 11th hour guy, and I don't usually lose my projects. 2 months ago, we were looking at Hartford and the storefronts in Lawrence, and I just said, this can't be. We got to revitalize our towns. They're tired. And then the incumbent has become the policy and communications chairwoman for the Democrat leadership. And the emails have become so negative, and I finally got tired of it. So that's all I have to say about my incumbent that I would be running against. I just think it's time we focus back on Michigan, and that's just what I've done all my life.
Okay, so you're from Southwest Michigan originally. Now you live on Mackinac Island. You've done some historic preservation projects, and you feel that Debbie Stabenow is not focused on Michigan enough, which is why you're running. So if you win the primary and make it into the Senate, what would be your priorities in Washington?
My priority is, because I worked in Capitol Hill, mm-hmm. I'll have a staff of experts in community development, and we'll do what I've been doing, and we'll go around to all these tired towns, and we'll get the towns to find a theme, and we'll get it organized, and we'll help them, and we'll educate them, and we're gonna talk to citizens to start filling their business space, whether it's retail or office, back in the downtowns. Those beautiful old buildings that are sitting there. Mm-hmm. People have to pay for space. They need space. Well, let's put it in downtown. And if we do that right, we can actually rebuild our downtowns from within, meaning we don't need taxpayer money, or not a lot of it. They maybe do some of the ancillary improvements. And so we'll start with Lawrence and Hartford. They're on Red Arrow Highway. You know, get the Pawpaw and all these towns. They're all over the United States, but all over Michigan. They're just, you know, they're just shells of themselves. And when you have an empty town, you got a depressed town. And when you have depression, there's a lot of things to go with that. And, you know, if we can do this, that's one of my things. You know, another part is I worked as a drug abuse specialist in Washington, D.C., because my mother was a druggie, and I ended up in St. Joe living in foster homes because the state took me when I was 9 months old. And so we got to deal with those kind of things. You know, experience counts. And I'm known as the 11th hour guy in all kinds of projects. Right. Benton Harbor is dear to my heart, of course. And because of its success, that soup kitchen success, we can work with other towns to duplicate that and not just give things to people, but actually teach people leadership and responsibility and getting back on their own, because that's exactly how the soup kitchen in Benton Harbor works.
Okay, so you just mentioned you grew up in foster homes around Southwest Michigan, but now you live on Mackinac Island.
I went up there in 1974 on our honeymoon and stayed all winter. And my job, because I wrote a letter to the editor, we have to restore this old lighthouse. Well, nobody was restoring it. They were going to tear it down. Talked them out of it, and we went back up there and ran the program to restore the lighthouse, and got restored, and movies were made around it and everything. So then I've been doing those kind of projects all over the state of Michigan.
We're talking with Bob Carr, candidate for U.S. Senate. Any relation to Milton Bob Carr?
We get messed up and confused every so often.
Okay.
Yes. It started when I actually purchased one of the American boats that used to sit in Holland, mm-hmm. and saved it, only to turn it over to millionaires who got in a fight and we lost her. The first story written, they found it was him. Well, okay. It wasn't. It was me. You know, that happens so once in a while.
Okay, that was Bob Carr, candidate for United States Senate, Republican. He's running in the GOP primary to face Debbie Stabenow next year. Originally from Southwest Michigan, moved to Mackinac Island, or wound up there eventually. He has worked on various historical preservation projects around Michigan. He says he decided to run after taking a tour of the state and seeing sort of rundown downtown small towns. He mentioned places like Lawrence and so forth, where he feels there should be more done to revitalize them. And he promised me we'll be hearing more from him as his candidacy continues. Also running in the GOP primary for United States Senate next year is that would be businessman John James, former state Supreme Court Justice Bob Young, and another businessman, Sandy Pensler. We'll try to hear from them in the next few months as that campaign continues, that primary campaign folks hoping to go up against Debbie Stabenow and now next year, Bob Carr reaching out to us after Fred Upton announced he's not running for United States Senate. I did ask Bob Carr what he thinks of Donald Trump, and he just sort of said, well, if Trump didn't talk so much, he'd be okay. Not the only person who I've heard say that about President Trump. But anyway, that's Bob Carr running for United States Senate. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now, I thought I'd tell you about something that's planned for later this month. Cornerstone Alliance is planning a couple of workshops for later this month for Benton Harbor area businesses because, as you may know, the voters in Benton Harbor last month, because it's now December, they approved a city income tax. And it was narrowly approved, but it passed and it survived a recount. So come January 1st, the city income tax will take effect in Benton Harbor. It's 1% for residents and businesses based in the city. It's 0.5% for non-residents who work in the city. Now, this is a concern for businesses. It somewhat did create something new that they have to deal with. And so Cornerstone Alliance is organizing a couple of workshops to talk with business owners about this tax and what they need to know. I chatted with Cornerstone Alliance's Rob Cleveland about the forums they've got planned. He was telling me, you know, a lot of companies have had a lot of questions about this tax since the election.
We've certainly heard from a lot of businesses about the tax, and we feel obviously it's an extension of what Cornerstone Alliance does every day, which is business attraction, business retention, and expansion. And we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to help our businesses get ready.
So educating businesses in Benton Harbor about how this tax will affect them and what they need to do, of course, falls in line with Cornerstone's mission of economic development. And Rob was telling me these workshops that are planned for later this month in Benton Harbor to tell businesses about how the new income tax works, they're really mostly focused on what these businesses need to do in relation to their employees.
The income tax is coming January 1st, and we want to make sure that the businesses aren't caught off guard and are able to comply to the best of their ability.
And of course, that concerns the employees.
What we don't want to have happen is you never want to have to go back to an employee in July and say, hey, we should have been collecting income tax from you, and now we need to make that up in July as opposed to doing it all year long.
So Rob was telling me most businesses will just withhold an employee's tax from their paychecks, but they don't want to wind up with a scenario where somebody gets this, you know, maybe late into the year and realizes they should have been withholding for this tax, and suddenly they owe a couple of hundred dollars. And this tax applies to businesses as well. That's 1% of their income within a city. And so that's something a lot of them are concerned about. And so Cornerstone holding a couple of workshops. They're both on the same day. They'll be on December 20th. One of them will be at 8 a.m. The other one will be at noon. They will be held at the Oak Room, which is at the Citadel in downtown Benton Harbor. And any business owner who wants to attend one of these workshops to learn more about how the new city income tax in Benton Harbor will work should call Cornerstone Alliance and register to show up so you can be there so they can make sure that they have enough spaces for everybody. Cornerstone Alliance now stepping to the front, doing what it can to help businesses navigate to this new tax. And that's coming up on December 20th. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now it's time for a quick break. When we come back, we will chat with the Pokagon Fund. They recently sort of organized a study. They paid for a study anyway on hunger in Harbor Country. They worked with a local church to determine what sort of need there is for food assistance in Southern Berrien County. We will hear about that on the next segment of the show. And if you would like to weigh in on something that we discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's ourtake@wsjm.com. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Friday edition of the show. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. Right now for this segment of the show, I thought we would chat with the Pokagon Fund. The Pokagon Fund, this is an organization down in New Buffalo. And what they do is they capture a very small portion of Four Winds Casino slot revenues. And then they distribute that money to charities, nonprofits around Harbor Country, Southern Berrien County. The Pokagon Fund recently teamed up with a church in Harbor to do a study on food insecurity in Harbor Country and how it can be addressed. So I caught up with the Pokagon Fund's Janet Cocchiarelli to learn more about this study, how it worked, and what they found. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Janet, the Pokagon Fund recently teamed up with the Church of the Mediator, which is in Harbert, to study hunger and food insecurity in southern Berrien County. Tell us a bit more about this, what you did here and what you found.
Yes, it was evident as we were attending the mobile food pantries in Harbor Country that, you know, we probably weren't serving as many people as we could. We're feeding about 44 to 50 households per month. And we had a sense that probably there were many more who just couldn't come during the hours during the day when we offered the food pantries. And so Church of the Mediator decided to write a survey, a two-page survey that they then conducted with each of the participants at the different mobile food pantries over a particular period of time. And then they tried to collate that information and see what they could, if they could better understand the needs of those coming to the food pantries and to try to include the needs of those who weren't coming to the food pantry. And, you know, what they found out was sort of surprising. Would you like me to share that information with you?
Yeah, what'd they find?
Well, they discovered that, first of all, the mobile food pantries, while they're wonderful, mainly include at this time fresh produce, bread, sometimes some juice, and that food, as you can imagine, doesn't last very long. And what they could really use is the higher protein items, such as dairy and cheese and eggs and meat. So that was one of the things that we learned. And is there a way that we could raise more money to provide these higher protein items once a month? They also shared with us that they have a fear, that they are afraid every month that they won't have enough money to buy groceries for the month. And sometimes they cut down the portions of the food that they eat, or they skip meals altogether because there simply isn't enough food. They also shared with us that they knew other people who couldn't come to the mobile food pantries either because they were working during the day and we don't offer them at night or on Saturday. Or they were caring for a disabled family member or a parent, or there was some other reason that they couldn't get there. They didn't have a car, or they had a car, but they had no gas. So we asked the question, is there more flexibility? Are there other ways that we could get food to people? Those were some of the things that we learned from the survey.
Okay, so you learned that people need more protein, more fresh vegetables, and as part of these mobile food pantries, Pokagon Fund finances. So now that you've learned this information, what do you do with it?
Well, we collated the information, and then Church of the Mediator decided to have a meeting to try with all the individuals who are trying to solve the food insecurity problem. So organizations like Blessings in a Backpack or Harbor Country Rotary or other organizations that provide congregate meals such as Senior Nutrition Services, we brought them together. There were probably about 18 people in the room representing, you know, probably 14 different organizations in Harbor Country, all focused on meeting the need, the food needs of our people. And we presented the survey and talked through some of the issues. And so they've decided to form this grassroots coalition, and they're going to meet quarterly, and they haven't come up with any definite answers. Right now, they're just studying the situation to better understand the needs, and then they'll strategize on ways to respond to those needs.
Okay, so this is something you'll be looking at and talking about on a quarterly basis moving forward. And the Pokagon Fund's role in this is you sort of finance these various initiatives to fight hunger.
That's right. Okay. Yes, we fund most of the anti-hunger services that take place in Harbor Country.
Do we have any hard statistics about how serious the hunger problem is in Harbor Country?
Well, we figure that about 14% of the total population is facing food insecurity. What's really important to be aware of is the fact that we often talk in terms of people living in poverty, meaning that their income meets the federal standard for poverty, the federal threshold. But there's a whole cohort of people living in Harbor Country who aren't living at poverty. They're living above poverty, but they still can't afford basic needs. Now, United Ways of Michigan has created a label called ALICE, and it means Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. So these are hardworking families who are dedicated to providing the basic needs, but they simply can't afford to do so. They don't get paid enough, or they don't have insurance. And so while they're not living at poverty, they're struggling. So when you add those two cohorts together, those living in poverty plus ALICE, those numbers increase to about 43% of Three Oaks and about 39% in New Buffalo and 28% in Chickaming Townships. So those numbers increase quite a bit.
Right, yeah. The ALICEs, I've spoken to the United Way about this. They're not exactly technically in poverty, but they're sort of on the verge of it, and they do contribute to the overall need for food assistance in some cases.
So Asset Limited means they probably don't have savings, and they may not have a home. They don't have assets that they own that they could sell to generate more income. Income constrained means maybe they don't have a four-year or two-year degree, or and they can't move up. They can't ever increase the amount of money they're bringing in on an annual basis, so their income is constrained, but they're employed full-time. So as costs rise, they're not able to keep up with those. It's the squeezing of the middle class. You know, it's a national problem in the U.S.
You don't say. People are getting a raw deal. But at least the Pokagon Fund, with the money that you will allocate for these projects, you can help at least alleviate the problem to an extent.
Yeah, we can help, but it's going to take the municipalities to really come up with a regional plan for economic development. And really for the state of Michigan to think about a long term for economic development to help people out of poverty. And corporations are going to have to take this on and start thinking about more equitably distributing wealth. So it's a much bigger issue than just, you know, the Pokagon Fund, because we can help people out of a crisis, but you can't gift card people out of poverty.
Okay, that was Janet Cocchiarelli with the Pokagon Fund. She's the director of the Pokagon Fund, ending there by talking about sort of the broader problem. But what we started out talking about was the Pokagon Fund recently worked with a church in Harbert. It's the Church of the Mediator. They had a survey of individuals who use mobile food pantries that they have in different places throughout Harbor Country. These food pantries largely paid for by the Pokagon Fund. They did some surveys to determine what sort of food need there is among the folks who get assistance. And they're going to use that information moving forward into the next year to better plan future mobile food pantries or future food assistance programs. And more people than you might think require food assistance. And the reasons for that are much broader than anything the Pokagon Fund can help with. But they are evaluating their food assistance programs in Harbor Country. The Pokagon Fund has a role in that. And I appreciate Janet's time. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will chat with the Van Buren Conservation District to learn about the latest invasive species to be detected in Michigan's Great Southwest. This one was found near Niles. We'll chat with the Conservation District's Eleanor Siraki to find out what you can do to help stop the spread of this invasive plant. And then later on, to end out today's show, I will chat with our man in the dark, Jacob Holmes, to learn about the what the options are at the box office this weekend. And if you'd like to weigh in on something that we discuss on the show, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's ourtake@wsjm.com. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take, Friday edition of the show. We're almost done here for the week. And then I'm heading out of Dodge for the weekend. This is, of course, a show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about as of late on WSJM News. We get extended conversations with the folks who are in the know or the folks who are making things happen here in Michigan's Great Southwest. So far in today's program, we chatted with Senate candidate Bob Carr. He has some Southwest Michigan ties. He is interested in revitalizing small towns. He has done work on historic preservation around Michigan in his life. We chatted with him. He's running as a Republican for United States Senate. He wants to go up against Debbie Stabenow next year. Coming up on future editions of The Hour Take, we'll talk with the other candidates in that GOP primary. Also on this today's show, we talked with the Pokagon Fund about their efforts to eradicate hunger in Harbor Country and to perfect their food assistance programs. We also heard about Cornerstone Alliance's workshops they have planned for later this month to inform local businesses on how Benton Harbor's new income tax is going to work. Right now, I wanted to check in with the Van Buren Conservation District. They recently put out word of the latest invasive species to be found here in Michigan's Great Southwest. It's a plant species. And so I caught up with the Van Buren Conservation District's Eleanor Siraki to learn about this plant. Let's hear that conversation now. Okay, Eleanor, now this is the Japanese stilt grass that you found in the Niles area. Tell us a little more about this plant.
Absolutely. So Japanese stilt grass has been established for some time south of us in other states, but it was found for the first time in the month of September just near Ann Arbor. And then within a month, we received notice that a second patch had been found here just northeast of Niles.
Okay, so in Niles, do you know specifically where this plant was detected?
So it's near the business park in that area, and it was actually found right along what is used to be a snowmobile trail that was used in that area. So it may have come in on a sled or from someone else using that recreational area.
Okay, so what is this invasive Japanese stilt grass exactly?
Yeah, so Japanese stilt grass is a pretty delicate grass that actually got here when it was used as packing for porcelain and other materials that were sent over from Asia and Japan at the turn of the century. So it can grow very delicately. It gets to about 3 feet, and then it'll bend over and touch the ground again. And this means that it grows very densely, and it spreads quickly enough that it can shade out other grasses or forbs that are in forest understories. You'll usually see it in richer, moister forests or along disturbed areas like trails or roads.
And what is the problem with this invasive species? Why do we want to stop it from spreading?
Absolutely. So it's actually been a really expensive problem down south where they've been trying to deal with it for years because it grows so densely it can take over entire forest understories. And when that happens, you shade out all of the other native plants we have in the area, whether that's our wildflowers, our native grasses, or even some tree seedlings and saplings.
And so what can be done to fight the spread of the invasive Japanese stiltweed?
So it's actually a really easy species to hand pull if you catch it soon enough that it's a small patch. It has very, very shallow roots. So as long as you make sure to pull that entire root system, it's easy to treat by hand. And then it can just be disposed of. As you don't want to compost it. You want to make sure that you double bag it in black plastic to dispose of it. It does produce a large amount of seed, and those seeds can be moved really easily by bike tires, by boots, by other things like that. So you need to be careful when you are moving from one area to another to clean off your boots to make sure that you're decontaminating so that we aren't spreading these things further.
All right, and if you do spot this plant, we do have pictures of the Japanese stiltweed at WSJM.com. If you spot this plant out in the woods, what should you do?
I would love if you guys would give me a call and let me know. What we're trying to do right now is get a really good grip of just how far spread this species is in our area, because if we know where it is, then we can get a handle on it and treat it before it becomes established like it has down south.
All right, and if I see the Japanese stiltweed and I report it to the conservation district, what do you do from there?
So what we're planning to do is we want to make sure that we have a really good map of where it is first. It's a little too late in the season to do anything this year, especially as things are already starting to die back. They've already set seeds, so the damage has been done for this season. But really early on next spring, we want to start getting an idea as everything greens up.
Okay, we've been talking with Eleanor Siraki of the Van Buren Conservation District about the Japanese stiltweed, invasive plant species that has been detected in the Niles area after having spread around southern Michigan the last couple of decades, actually. And it was spotted by a former snowmobile track in a trail, that is, in Niles. And if you see this plant, you should notify the Van Buren Conservation District. They can do their part to take care of it come springtime when they form their plan for doing so. We have a picture of this invasive plant species at WSJM.com. Just Google Japanese stiltweed WSJM and you'll find it. And you can see what this plant looks like. It looks kind of just like common grass, but it can choke out other native plants. And so we want to fight the spread of the Japanese stiltweed. Eleanor, anything else you'd like to add?
I really hope that people can help us keep an eye out for this, because we know that it's here in the state now. We've been kind of dreading its appearance for years, But if we work together to figure out where it is, then we can stop it from being so much of an issue.
Okay, that was Eleanor Siraki with the Van Buren Conservation District telling us about the latest invasive plant species to be found in Michigan's Great Southwest. Newstalk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. It is Friday, which means a lot of people will be going to the movies this weekend. And of course, every Friday, I end every show on Fridays by having our man in the dark, Jacob Holmes, come in here and talk with me about the newest films available at the box office. Jacob, come on in here. All right, Jacob, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, it is Friday, and that means another weekend to see some films, but I understand there's a slight problem here, at least in the Benton Harbor area.
Right. This is one of those weird times of the year where there's actually no new releases coming out here specifically. I mean, there's always a new movie coming out every weekend somewhere, but here,
Right. Yeah,
we're not getting anything new to this week.
All right, so, you know, here's the thing. We're getting into awards season.
Yes.
There are now films that I am looking forward to that are...
Yes, and I as well. I think you and I are both really looking forward to The Disaster Artist, the biopic about the making of The Room.
I very much want to see The Disaster Artist.
One of the best, worst movie ever made.
Indeed. The Room is a special film. And so now a new movie directed by James Franco
And starring James Franco
about the production of The Room. When is that finally going to open here?
I don't know. It's limited releases this weekend. So it's like in New York and Los Angeles, those big metro cities.
Okay.
But from what I understand, the wide release is supposed to be next weekend.
Great. Well, hopefully it shows up here to Celebration Cinema next weekend.
Oh, I'm sure it will eventually at some point.
Well,
I may travel to see that movie because I really, really want to see it.
Same here. I'm willing to drive to Grand Rapids to see it if I have to. So I just hope it comes here. But we'll find out. So, you know, the Disaster Artist is getting incredibly good buzz, and that's something to watch out for. And there's another one that's getting crazy good reviews that comes out this weekend.
It's not here yet, but it's in the surrounding areas in Kalamazoo and the South Bend, Mishawaka area. Three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Oh, that one. Okay.
Oh, that wasn't the one you were thinking of.
We'll get to that other one in a second, but three billboards.
That was the first one that I thought of, because this is the one that's playing in Kalamazoo.
Okay.
It's kind of like a dark comedy, dark comic thriller sort of thing. So it's kind of like an earlier Coen Brothers movie. It's not made by them. They have no involvement.
It would be fitting if it was a Coen Brothers movie, though, because it stars Frances McDormand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about this mother whose daughter went missing some time ago, and she, was unhappy with how the case like wasn't solved or something, and she wasn't happy with how things happened, so she puts these three billboards outside the Missouri town where she lives, and is butting heads with the chief of police played by Woody Harrelson,
right,
to kind of get a better answer as to what happened to her daughter.
So it sounds like she's frustrated with the police for not finding her daughter. So she puts up these billboards. And so now the local sheriff or whatever, Woody Harrelson, is embarrassed. Right. And he's trying to get her to take the billboards down.
Right. Kind of reminds me of a little side plot thread in Stranger Things, the Netflix series.
Oh, okay.
There's a character who goes missing, dies. It's not a major spoiler. And this character's parents, never find out, what exactly happened to her, and they get all ticked at, the police.
Okay, but this is three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri. It's getting very good positive word of mouth.
Yes, it is. For a while there, it's being called one of the best movies of the year, and I'm certainly interested in seeing this.
Okay, yeah, it looks all right to me as well. I always love Woody Harrelson and Frances McDormand and anything. So is that coming next week to Benton Harbor, do you think?
I don't know. It'll come here eventually. I have no doubt that it'll get some big awards buzz, and it'll be in a position where pretty much every major theater in the U.S. will get it eventually. But it's playing at Celebration Crossroads in Portage this weekend, and it's playing in the theaters in South Bend and Mishawaka down there. So if you got to see this movie now, it's just not a bad drive away to go check it out.
No, that's not too bad. Which brings me to the third big awards movie that's now out, and I'm going to head to Michigan City this weekend.
Right, I'm probably going to see this one as well. It's Lady Bird.
Lady Bird,
the latest movie starring Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan.
That is how you say your name. I remember looking that up when Brooklyn came out, the last big awards movie that she was in.
Right. And now Lady Bird, this movie is like one of the, it's Possibly the best reviewed movie so far this year.
It is. It's not only the best reviewed movie this year, it's the best reviewed movie currently on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Of all time?
Of all time.
So this is sounds amazing, and that's why I'm making a trip down to Michigan City to see it this weekend. And this is not about Lady Bird Johnson.
No, it is not.
No, it is not a biopic. It is something entirely different.
It's a coming-of-age story, it seems like. It's kind of reminiscent of last year, Edge of 17.
Yes, I love that movie.
Yeah, it reminds me of that. Of course, this isn't, this is more of a drama than there seems to be less of a comic edge to this one. This one seems to go straight for the drama.
Right, and this, it's interesting. This movie, Lady Bird, takes place in 2002 and 2003.
Uh-huh.
Oddly enough. Also when The Disaster Artist takes place.
Oh, yeah, because The Room came out in 2003. Yeah, this is also the directorial debut of Greta Gerwig, I think is her name.
Yes.
Yeah, she's been a writer, and she's written a whole bunch of other pretty solid stuff. And, I'm really looking forward to seeing this.
Right. I very much want to see Lady Bird. I'll be at an adjacent town to see it. And this weekend, and you may
this theater is playing. This movie's playing in South Bend, there's also a theater in Kalamazoo that's showing it. As I looked up just before we turned the mics on.
Oh, really? Which one?
It's an AMC theater. It sounds like it's only in AMC theaters right now. But
they have an AMC theater in Kalamazoo.
I suppose so. Actually, no. It is playing in Celebration North in Grand Rapids.
Okay, you could.
This is what happens when movies don't play here. We obsessively look at what other theaters are showing.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's right. There is a. An AMC in Kalamazoo.
So right now it looks like it's only in a select few theaters, and it's just gonna. I have no doubt that it'll get here as well. It's one of those slow burn expansion sort of things.
Well, I'm not waiting. I'm going to Michigan City. You're going to South Bend. We'll both see this movie.
Right, and it's interesting to note the previous record holder for best reviewed movie of all time on Rotten Tomatoes was Toy Story 2.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good movie, isn't it?
Yeah, all the Toy Story movies were great.
All right.
And speaking of Pixar, Coco is still playing. Go see that movie, too, if you haven't seen it already. That is an amazing film.
And that is playing here in Benton Harbor.
Right.
So is that your recommendation?
It's my if you're not into the awards buzz, I'd say go see Coco. Take the kids to see Coco. If you don't have kids, go see Coco.
Go see the Coco.
If you don't like Frozen, show up a half hour late because of the Frozen Christmas special that they play before it.
There you go.
It's really not that bad, but I have been warning people who want to go see Coco. It's like if you don't like Frozen, show up a half hour late because you're really gonna be annoyed. It's a good 40 minutes before the actual movie starts, what with trailers and everything.
All right, so that's Coco. If you're sticking to the Benton Harbor area this weekend, see that one. Jacob, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, as always.
News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for today's edition of Our Take. I've been your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to weigh in on something that we discussed here on Our Take today, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's OURTAKE at WSJM.com. As always, I wish you a fantastic and very safe weekend.